You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I know for us, once KD ruptured his Achilles, and this was just me, like, I wrote a really big piece on it too, before any decision was made. So my take is out there. I'm not flip-flopping, but like once he ruptured his Achilles, I was like not interested in this guy. I had already been out on Kyrie a little bit before that, just because like I thought his last season in Boston was, and I know he's said that he had a lot of stuff going on in his personal life with his, I think was it his uncle that passed away. And I'm sympathetic to that. It did not impress me the way he handled anything last season. And it just kind of feels like he's not, it seems like whatever love he has for basketball, and I don't doubt he loves basketball, he doesn't seem to love being in the NBA. And that was just like an always a concern for me, obviously, because, you know, whatever you think about Boston and their media, like the Knicks is its own fucking animal. I just was out on that entire thing once KD ruptured his Achilles. Like, did you guys feel that same way, or were you like, we have to do this kind of thing?
I mean, I felt like they had to get him. Kevin Durant's a top 12-ish all-time player, and I think, like, I don't know, I think it was Dinwiddie said that, like, even at, like, 85% or something, he'd be Dirk, which I don't agree with that, but I think he's just such an astronomical talent, and add into the fact that, like, if you're the Nets, like, who else are you going to get, like, at this point? Like, you haven't really gotten a ton of big names, like, and, like, getting him and Kyrie, like, I don't know, it's just so much star power, puts you in a completely different class, and, like, for whatever it winds up being, like, if he comes back and he's not anywhere close to where he was, if Kyrie, like, decides to, I don't know, like, retire to focus on the Uncle Drew sequel or something, like, whatever winds up happening, I think it was worth it just because, like, the team they had before wasn't going to win anything either. Like, they would maybe get to the second round if LeVert hit his ceiling and if Dinwiddie and him, like, really clicked or whatever, but I don't know. This is, like, I think a risk worth taking for sure on two guys who could very easily be top 10 guys in the league.
Yeah, I think it's one, a credentializer of the process that they had gone under over the last couple of years, and like just the progress they made, that those guys, even though, you know, they definitely have their faults to them. I wish KD didn't tear his Achilles and came to the Nets. But
oh, yeah. If he did tear his Achilles, I would not have even entertained the idea that, like, that the Knicks should not sign KD.
It's just like, I think you can't be too picky, because Marcus, as you said before, like, what are the Nets going to do with that other team? It's like, okay, we're going to have a great culture and win 44 games every fucking year. Like, oh, that sucks. Who cares? It's not, but I also don't think you'd be like, ah, well, KD tore his Achilles, or like, let's skip this one. You know, Giannis, Kawhi, let's put the bank on those two. Like, it's just at some point you have to cash in those chips, because there is a finite timeline, because the guys that you had drafted and developed, eventually they become more and more expensive, and then you don't have the cap space to pull something off. So there's only a very short timeline that comes, I'd say, once every couple of years, where it really makes sense to bring these star type players in, and that you can have a winning team around them. So it'll be, I think it's still, jury's still out if the Nets can actually do that next year, and how KD looks, how Kyrie looks, and if he's able to play also, and kind of what shape he's in, and if he gets injured again. But I think this is something that, you know, you have to do. And, you know, I think, Schwinn, Drew, you guys probably haven't had this feeling, but whenever someone, a star player comes, I guess you had it with Amari, but whenever a real, real star player comes, regardless of the condition they come in, it will feel really good for you guys.
Yeah, there's definitely that. I also think comparing the two situations for, like, the Knicks could, like, for the Knicks, like, they also had the, you know, the first round picks. They're already going to be in the lottery. They were rebuilding. Like, there were other avenues for them to improve and, like, get, like, a star level player, right? Unlike for the Nets, like, they were ascending, so therefore it's like they couldn't just, like, tank. This was like one of the only ways to take the next step. So I think it's worth the risk for the Knicks. It was tough to really do that risk because of just given, like, the media scrutiny, the way the team is just generally covered. Because, like, if what if what happened with the Nets happened this year for like the next day, idea of like Kyrie's doing his thing, they're underachieving, these sort of things, like they would just, it would be like same old Knicks. Look at them, you know, signing injury plagued players, you know, to massive contracts in their 30s. Like it would have been like, I think it's like a different animal in that sense. So that's why it's not like the end of the world that the Knicks didn't do it. But yeah, of course, if like, the, you know, if they signed, you know, Kevin Durant, it's like, it's Kevin Durant. Of course you're going to be excited. Like it, that's who it is. I do think just there's, for the Knicks, it actually wasn't like, it's not the end of the world. I think for the Nets, I don't want to say it was the end of the world, but you're right. Like it puts a huge like ceiling, like it kind of like caps the ceiling off. So it's like, what do you do after like the 42 win with D'Angelo Russell, right? It's like, where do you go after that? It's kind of hard to take that next to like a 50 win team to a like a title contending team. Like it's almost like they had to do it and they did it, and they should be, you know, that's a good thing.
For sure. I think the one thing, like with the, if they kind of run it back this year, this offseason, do the same thing where it's like, obviously they give Randall the big contract, but also guys like Portis and fucking Taj Gibson just eating up their cap space, obviously on short-term deals. Mm-hmm. Like if they do that again this year, I think they need to change their strategy more to what you guys said before with what the Nets used to do and what the Hawks are doing, seem like they're doing now, where they're taking on bad contracts and using up their cap space that way, not just having like veterans who have no upside to them and bringing them on. So I think there's one thing, there's a merit to not signing a guy like KD, but I don't think that what they ended up doing was something that made up for it. I think that they kind of screwed themselves over this year and kind of delayed their progress. And I think moving forward, they can build on that, hopefully, and definitely have some more at-bats to right the wrongs.
Yeah, the Knicks' big thing was like, the Taj Gibson signing was pretty decent. In terms of, like, I know he was overpaid, but he was actually super helpful for like being just an adult in the room, where the Knicks really, I think, just kind of messed up in a way. It's just like doubling down on like extra players. Like they didn't need to sign Elfrid Payton. They didn't necessarily need to sign Portis and Marcus Morris, right? Just kind of pick one of those. Portis is actually probably better off, you know, just like off the bench doing like role stuff than like that. And they took a swing on Julius Randle and it didn't
work out though, because they got the pick from that.
They did. Yeah. Yes. Morris did work out. It was just more of like they signed like two guys too many.
I think the big problem was once you made the Porzingis deal, like you have to also plan for the kind of like downside risk there, which is ultimately like you don't land stars in free agency, which I again was fine with, because like I don't know, man, like I'm just not of the opinion that like Kristaps Porzingis is fucking mana from heaven. Like he's a really good player and that's fine, but like I just don't see him as an all NBA guy. I honestly don't think that he is a top 15 player in the league, not right now, and I'm not sure if I think he has that ceiling for sure. There's no question about that. Like, you know, if he made an all NBA second team, if he was a top 10 player at some point, it wouldn't completely surprise me. But I was okay with like the risk of like, hey, fuck this. Like, let's clean up our cap sheet and let's take a shot this summer, because that was last summer was one of those summers where it was like you had Kyrie, you had KD, you had Kawhi, you had Butler, you had like all these stars on the market. It's like it's worth it to take a shot sometimes. And if you miss, you miss. But like the pivot from your miss is at planning for that pivot is as important as planning for like, well, if we get those guys, how do we fill out the roster? Right. And I think the issue was like their pivot was like, well, we still have to try to like make the playoffs this year. And that was a stupid fucking pivot, especially because the way they went about it was stupid. Cause it's like, okay, you should either like try to like, okay, well, we want to still try and make the playoffs and become good. Either do that and be fine with giving out like 2 or 3 year deals, because then you might actually be able to get like good players at, you know, a decent price, versus like, well, we want to try and make the playoffs and we want to keep all our cap flex. And like, it was just too many things they were trying to juggle between. And then obviously they overdid it. But like, I understood the idea of what they were doing. I just think that like, you know, they clearly went overboard. And they also, the bigger issue, forgetting going overboard, is that they clearly made promises to these guys they signed, like, hey, we're going to give you X amount of minutes and you're going to have X, Z role. And it's like, you know, once you start doing that, then you're compromising your own long-term future and like your young guys who, you know, in some ways, I think until Mike Miller took over, were just like lost at sea. But yeah, like I said, I think the Knicks are in a fine position right now overall. Like you had to be okay with the possibility that you were going to, you know, the way I think I put it was that like, when you made the Porzingis trade, the downside was you push your rebuild out 2-3 years. Like that's the obvious like downside there. If you don't get stars, and that's fine with me. It's just like, you know, you're a year into that now. What do you have to show for it? And it's like, it's not all bad. Like you said, like they got a first for Morris. They got a 2021 second from Detroit in that trade too, which should probably be pretty nice. Especially considering that draft is supposed to be good too. And Detroit is probably going to suck next year. There's good stuff there, but you have to have guys in the front office that understand how to use that to move you up the win curve and like advance your timeline and make your team good. And it has to go beyond like, well, we're going to keep our cap flexible and we have young guys and we have some picks. Like it has to be more than that. So, you know, we'll see what happens. Like I don't fully agree that like the Nets had to do this. I think they wanted to do it. I think they committed to doing it once they made that trade dumping Crab. And I think that like, I think they probably had an idea then that they were in a good position. I think even before they made that trade, there was all that scuttlebutt that like Kyrie was a done deal, right? That was like pretty much rumored during the middle
Kyrie
of that.
Was known before KD, I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they might have gotten a sense at that point, like, hey, this KD thing could definitely happen. So like, I think they committed to it then. And KD hadn't ruptured his Achilles then. So I get it. It's just like they made that choice. Like that's the choice they made versus like trying to figure out, okay, how do we slow roll this build and like keep D'Lo and keep this thing going? And I don't think that's wrong. Like it's fine. I think, like you said, there's a variety of reasons you make that trade or you make those signings, like, you know, legitimizing kind of your process and just the star power. I understand it. I guess like where I kind of have an issue with the entire fucking thing is like, you know, you make that move, I get it, but it's like part of that move is you have to give DeAndre Jordan a 4-year, $40 million contract. Part of that move is that like Kyrie and KD throw a fucking bitch fit because DeAndre's not starting, and then you ditch the coach that like helped you get those position you to get those guys in the first place. I don't know. That stuff just leaves a bad taste in my mouth, and like it kind of feels in some way like an abandonment of what got you there in the first place. And that's weird to me, but like, you know, I understand these things happen in the NBA and like, you kind of have to take those chances sometimes. It just, I don't know. I just didn't really like the kind of aftermath of all of that.
Right. I mean, trust me, I'm not happy with like 1 year in how it's worked out. It fucking sucked, but
the upside is still there. Yeah.
I'm looking at it kind of at where we were at the time.
Yeah, yeah. And like the upside is still there for sure. So final question. One, what are your thoughts on just like Kyrie's general stance on, you know, returning to play? And two, who do you think the mole was?
For Kyrie, Josh and I have talked about this. I think like what he was saying, I think made a lot of sense. And I think like, since he's part of the MVPA, he's a vice president, like he has a big role to speak for players who maybe don't feel like their opinion is being heard and whatnot. So I totally get like why he was asking questions and why he was like just making sure everything is considered before a decision is made. And Josh and I talked about like middle grounds where like there's eight teams that aren't going to be in the bubble. There's players like Kyrie and like LaMarcus Aldridge who are injured, who maybe can do stuff outside the bubble. And then like in the bubble, like the NBA would obviously have to like work with ESPN and any broadcasters to like have like a ticker on the bottom with like places to donate or like facts or whatever, like stuff on the sides, court side, like where there would typically be ads, like have stuff there. So I think there's a way where they can return to play with like stuff in the bubble promoting the message, and then have like a ton of players outside who are also doing that work. All the Warriors guys obviously would be out of the bubble, so I think there's a way to balance it. And then the mole, I'm not sure. Josh, do you have any thoughts on the mole?
Yeah, so it's so we have to kind of go back, and I've done some detective work on this. We have to first go back to remember the quote from a couple months ago after like a bad loss, and he was like, you know, we know the core is. He like named the core, but like left out a bunch of guys and included Temple. So it's none of the guys he listed in the core. So now we have to look outside of that. It's not Jared Allen. He's like way too docile, I think.
He would never say anything. He's building computers.
Yeah, exactly. He knows that, like, the NBA has a plan to come back even. I think they're just going to call him one day. He's going to be like, oh, cool, I have to come down to Orlando. Let's do it. So it's not him. It's tough. Like, I was thinking maybe Joe Harris, but then I don't think he's the type of guy to say that also. So it's a very tough question. I think a guy who's disgruntled, who had a really terrible first season in Brooklyn, Taurean Prince. I think that makes the most sense.
Interesting.
That's actually pretty interesting. My theory was it was actually DeAndre Jordan framing Jared Allen just to get Allen out so he can like guarantee a starter role. It's like, all right, I get to play my 35 minutes and just suck it up, but like Jared Allen's gone. That was my theory on it.
Yeah, I mean, I thought about this a little bit because what the fuck else do you do during quarantine other than think about useless shit like this? But like, I could totally see it being somebody. I would think it would be somebody who was like unhappy that kind of how this season played out and that Atkinson, you know, got pushed out, kind of. Not kind of, did get pushed out. So my guess is that, like, and it's probably some fucking loser too, right? Who initially reported it? Bondi, okay? I think Bondi has had, like, these stories kind of first on this guy too, very various reports. I think it's, like, Crooks. That's what I think.
Oh,
because like one. I think he was the first one to report that whole thing with like his court case too, and Bondi was also like in with Porzingis' camp, and they're both Latvian, so maybe there's a connection there. I don't know. That just like makes sense to me because I can't. Prince, like, I get what you're saying. He just seems like such a coward though. Like, I just can't see him doing that.
I would think he would want to lay low this entire season after what happened.
Yeah, he would, but like he kind of did lay low. It's not like anybody knows, or there. I mean, maybe they know. Who knows what the fuck's going on there? I just think it's very interesting. Like, and I hate to like harp on it because it's like it's stupid to harp on culture, but it is really like interesting to kind of think of the Nets a year ago versus the Nets now, and it's like everything is different, and it's like one of the more interesting teams in the NBA. How much has changed in just a year. And I think if I told you guys a year ago that, like, literally Kenny Atkinson would no longer be the coach, you'd have Kyrie and KD, but, like, they basically didn't play this year and all this other shit, like, went down. Like, I think you guys would be like, nah, yeah. No way.
All right. This was a good discussion, guys. I really appreciate you jumping on. So, Marcus, Joshua, what would you like to plug?
The Locked On Nets podcast. If any listeners want to hate listen to anything, maybe keep track of how bad DeAndre Jordan is doing, you can find that Locked On Nets is the podcast.
Yeah, the Nets fans hate me already, so because I just criticize the team so much. So I think Knicks fans actually might enjoy hearing it. But yeah, and also you can follow us on Twitter at Locked On Nets. Marcus is at Marcus Barahal, and I'm at JMBass_.
Do you guys want to plug Built Bars or anything?
They're delicious.
No comment.
I'll plug that.
Oh, man. Schwinn, what would you like to plug?
I got nothing, man. I got nothing for you.
Yeah, I got nothing either right now. Yeah. Sorry, guys. But, yeah, just go listen to Locked On Nets. And that's our show. See you till next time.